And then I'll ask you the names. Okay, today is February 28th, 2018. Okay, what is your name?
My name is Debbie Pierce.
And yours?
Mine is Daniel Pierce.
And where do you live?
We live in Protection. We work in Ashland.
Okay, what is your occupation?
My occupation is transportation director, and I'm also an EMT on Clark County EMS, and I'm affiliated with fire department.
Okay.
I'm a street superintendent for the city of Ashland. I'm on the Ashland Fire Department and Clark County EMS.
Okay, and how old are you?
I'm 65.
And how old are you?
I'm 58.
Okay. Now, when did you first become aware of the Starbuck fire, hereafter referred to simply as the fire? And where were you?
We were in Dodge City.
Okay.
I'd had a dentist appointment.
And it was just right about noon, right about 12 o'clock. We were headed south on 14th out of town. And Dodge City was beginning to fight a fire down there.
It started at the racetrack from a burn the day or so before. They burnt some trees and thought they had them out.
Right.
And it had jumped, was that Highway 56 going west? It had jumped out and was getting into all the homes up in there, and they were getting ready to shut the highway down.
I had received a call at that same time from Jenny Giles Betchert asking if I knew where the fire was, because the valley where they farm and ranch was filling up with smoke. And I told her I didn't know because we were in Dodge City at that time, that I would make some phone calls and call her back.
So how did you get a page or something that told you about the fire?
We did shortly after that. We had not received an actual page at that time, but we did shortly after that. I ended up calling Fire Chief Dave Reger and asked him, and he told me that they were getting ready to roll down southwest of Englewood to down around Frosty Ettinger's place. And so I called Betchert's back and told them that the wind was in that direction and it was probably coming from there. In the meantime, I called my superintendent at Ashland Schools and talked to him about making sure he kept track of the fire and that I was going to pick up a student that we have in Dodge City that was attending there at Youthville and bring them home in my private vehicle so I didn't have to make a second trip.
So the wind was terrible.
Did you have trouble once you got out of Dodge getting back? Did you run into any smoke or fire on the...
After we got out of Dodge?
Uh-huh.
We got through that intersection. They were shutting that intersection down south of Dodge just as we were leaving. We
right.
were probably about the last vehicle to get out to go south on 283. And we could see the smoke in the south, and about that time my phone rang, and Francis Young was at the firehouse, and he says, "Where are you at?"
Yeah.
And I told him, he said, "I'll get your gear, and I will meet you up
on the pasture
on
road.
On the pasture road.
Up towards Mineola, okay?
For the fire up there.
So what truck?
He was in the old 56.
Okay. And just you and Francis on that truck?
Yes.
And is that a big truck? How many gallons?
It was one of our big trucks at that time. It had 750 gallons on it.
Okay, so you went to help Mineola with that fire?
To yes. meet him up there, yeah.
To meet him on the pasture road. We had, by the time we got to Mineola, I had placed a call to Millie Fudge, who was the emergency preparedness and the EMS director, and asked her if they had shut down any highways yet, because we knew that the fire had advanced into southwest of Englewood and was moving towards Englewood. And they were getting ready to evac Englewood. And I had made that call, and she said, "Not yet." And so we got to Mineola and came south to the wind towers and tried to go back to the east to catch into the pasture road. And the fire, I was driving, and the fire was everywhere.
It was
right
across,
in there.
We couldn't go south. It was across every road at that time. Every time we turned around, there was another firewall going through.
So did you have trouble meeting up with Francis?
Well, we figured out the only way we were going to get through is go back to the highway if they haven't shut the highway off.
Because so, if you don't get to the pasture road up there, you don't get to the pasture road.
So right.
There are no other roads.
We called dispatch, Clark County dispatch, and she said, no, they had not closed the road yet. It was still open. I said, well, good, we're coming through. She said, well, it's still open at this time. So we went around into Ashland, and I picked up 55 with Don White and Russ Hensley, and we went up north to catch up with Francis up there on the pasture road, and that's okay. Where I hooked up with him.
So what is 55?
That's our support vehicle. It's got a six-man cab. We carry extra gear in it, extra people. It's got a lot of our, it's our rescue truck.
Right. So then when you got up there, y'all climbed on 56?
I climbed on the back of 56 with Francis, and those two stayed in 55, and we joined up with three of Mineola trucks. And we were just on the other side of the rock house, and we thought, well, we'll try to make a stand. This road's going to make kind of a fire break if it doesn't jump it. And we started down, heading east down this fire line that was going to the south, to the northwest, northeast. And we got partway down in this draw, and that wind switched, and it almost came over the top of us. We circled around and got back up to the pasture road. And realized, you know, that this is a big deal. And then we got a call, said, we need to go back to Ashland because it's coming into Ashland. And shortly after that, the call came through that there was a fire on the Herman Ranch. So we didn't even know if we could beat it to get back into Ashland.
So where's the Herman Ranch from where you were at? Is it
it's back
still west and south of where you were at?
Yeah, it was probably about 5-6 miles south.
And back to the west.
And then back to the west.
And was that fire coming from the northeast to northwest?
It was coming from the southwest.
It was coming from the southwest? It was the one that was coming from Englewood?
Yeah, that was the one. It had just got started, I think, when the call came in. And then the wind switched shortly after that. But it had went south, northwest, northeast, excuse me, far enough that it actually joined that Mineola fire. And so that made a solid fire line from there clear down into where the Englewood fire was.
Uh-huh.
And we thought, we got to get back because we know it's coming in. Because Dave said, you got to get to Ashland. This fire's coming in.
So where were the Mineola guys? Were they still up north?
Yeah, we told them that we had to leave. And they said they understood. And they turned back north to get on the other side of on the north side of that fire line. And that was the last time we saw them that.
And then I think they went from north down south, across the lake, and mm-hmm. down towards the Giles Ranch. And
so, what kind of fire were you seeing, and how was it behaving?
It was wild. It was there was at least 40 foot flames coming through there on the initial run. And the fire line behind it was just solid. I mean, there was no break in it. I've been on the fire department a lot of years. When I was over at Medicine Lodge on the Anderson Creek fire,
mm-hmm.
and actually this was just mind-boggling compared to the Anderson Creek. I knew we were in for it. This was not going to be good.
So was there a lot of smoke? Was it dark smoke? Or
yeah, you couldn't.
Light?
When you got into the smoke, you couldn't see in front of your face. It was so thick. Francis and I, we got back. We got to Ashland. On our way in, we passed Dave Bozidon, who was in a tractor and disc. He was on the east side of the road, and he was discing. And we drove by, and we looked at each other and said, he don't have a big enough disc. And that was. Then we got on into town. And the fire wasn't there yet, but the smoke was so thick you couldn't see. So Francis and I got out a 54, And 55 was back at that, or 56. And 55 was back at that time, so we went west towards Englewood to try to find where the fire line was.
Yep.
To see just what we were getting into.
On the highway? Or how were you going?
We took the highway to, we went approximately 4 miles west, and then we turned back south. And the fire, by the time we went back south, probably 3 miles, and we realized the fire had already went through in front of us. And so we circled around, went around a section, and figured out that this thing was already going through. This was a secondary fire back in here. The main fire was still ahead of us. And that's when we heard the trucks trying to outrun the fire, getting into the Gardner Ranch. And so we went back to town at that time because we knew that Ashton was in trouble.
Yeah. Okay, so while he's up here fighting fire north of town, you made it back to Ashland, and what are you up to?
When I let him off at the firehouse, I was already in talking to the USD 220 superintendent at that time, and that we were going into evacuation modes and making sure that parents were picking up their kids. And we did not run buses to the west. We did not run buses to the north. And parents either had somebody, a teacher, somebody that was in charge of their kids, or they were making it in to pick up their kids. And about that time, I got a call from Ashland Hospital. Actually, it came from Jason Endicott, the grade school principal. And he said, where are you? Ashland Hospital is trying to locate you, and they need our special needs bus to evacuate. So I went and got the special needs bus out, and I happened to see Krista Branson, who was an aide at our grade school, and she helps our special needs child in a wheelchair. And she was used to using the belts and stuff, and so I asked her what she was doing, and she said, I guess I'm going with you. So we met up down at the Ashland Hospital. We also took our small 24-passenger bus down there. And they loaded the walking people onto it, plus their van. And then they put wheelchair people into their wheelchair van. We started loading with the help of the nurses. Aaron Fast and several of the others were right there, started loading wheelchairs up on our ramp, and then we'd pick the people up, and we would belt them into the seats. We'd pick them up and move them to a seat until we had transferred 18 people on that bus who were all with wheelchairs. We'd fold up the wheelchairs, and we started stacking them. Mm-hmm. The ones that we could not move out of a wheelchair, we secured. I had four sets of securement straps to secure those people. And once that was done, Dr. Breon Clark was there, and we were all ready to move. They had decided to move us to Buffalo.
So both of your vehicles, the 24-passenger and the special needs bus, went to Buffalo?
The 24-passenger bus ended up evacuating to Coldwater with the people that could walk. Mm-hmm. The wheelchair, non-ambulatory people, we went to Buffalo with.
And did you have them, had you begun, started unloading them?
We transferred to Buffalo. We could see the fire line coming in there and south of Ashland, all the way to Buffalo. And we got everybody into the hospital and into rooms at Buffalo with the help of the Buffalo hospital and nurses. Got everybody into rooms, and the fire was starting to move towards Buffalo because of the wind shift. Mm-hmm. And Buffalo, they decided to evacuate Buffalo. So we ended up loading everybody again.
So do you remember what time that was?
I'm thinking it was around 7 or 8. It may have been later.
It was
probably around... I don't remember the time.
It was earlier because we were there when they were evacuating, and it was probably like 6.
I know it got dark in a hurry, and we were also... Once we got our patients loaded, we had 2 aides from the Buffalo Hospital on with us. And they took care of the patients because we also added Buffalo people. I had a full busload.
So how many can you carry on your special needs vehicle?
It's a 42 passenger with a 4 wheelchair access. We had a full bus. We didn't have them 3-2 seat. I think 2 or 3 of them we did. But for the most part, we had a full bus. Then by that time, Buffalo had gotten out their activity bus. And we moved over to their nursing home and helped them load the ambulatory people onto their tour, their activity bus.
Right.
And it seemed like it was dark. I'm not sure what time it was.
Yeah.
And we, by that time, they had decided we were evacuating to Woodward. And so.
And they decided that was far enough that you'd be secure there?
So we evacuated to Woodward, and we could see Fireline all the way to Woodward. And got into Woodward, went to a nursing home in the southeast part of Woodward, and helped them unload. And we unloaded the Woodward or the Buffalo patients there that were not hospital patients. The nursing home patients we unloaded there. And then from there we went to Woodward Hospital and unloaded our patients and Buffalo's hospital patients that we had on our bus.
So they had room enough at that time to... At both the nursing home and the hospital?
They made room. There were people.
Bring in people?
There were people everywhere in that little nursing home and the hospital. I cannot say more about Woodward Hospital. They did a...
Very accommodating?
They were very accommodating and they did an excellent job.
So did you get a meal? do you remember eating?
I don't remember eating, honestly. I do remember that Krista and I, we knew that we were going to spend the night there at the hospital. They said they had a couple rooms for us and they had showers and stuff. So we went to the local Walmart and bought some clean clothes and some shampoo and stuff. And Woodward Hospital supplied us a bed. And I just remember getting out of the shower and looking at my watch then, and it was midnight. And I had not talked to Dan since I let him off.
So you didn't know where he was or anything? And he probably didn't know where you were?
Neither one of us.
Did he even know that you were helping the hospital?
I don't think so. Not at that time. We finally talked to each other about 1:30 that morning.
So were you in the fire station by then, or were you still out on a truck?
I was still out on a truck.
Do you know where you were? Were you in town?
At that time... We was on top of a hill watching Ashland sit in the middle of a fire ring.
Yeah.
I didn't have a camera.
Which side of town you were in?
Don White and I were in truck 56, and we were on the west side fire line from the landfill to the highway and across. And we'd made a decision that fire wasn't going to get into Ashland because the new hospital was on the east side of that fire line. Mm-hmm. And a farmer had been out there, Mike Hardman, he had disced all around the west side of that hospital. So that made a good fire break, but we decided we weren't going to let it get to there. And so he and I sat on that fire line and run it. And then the truck was halfway broke down, but we made it work. But because we couldn't leave very far from town, it wasn't that safe.
Yeah.
So we stayed on it, running that fire line back and forth.
Did you put out some telephone poles or line poles?
We were about on our third trip back for water, and we just watered up at the fire station, and we're heading back out on the truck route. which is on the west side of town, in between there and the hospital, and a city employee flagged us down. He said, I need you guys now. I said, what he got? He says, our electric poles coming into town, supplying the town, is they're all on fire, and we're never going to lose power in town.
So where is that? Is that by the dump? Go down that road?
Yeah, it's one mile west of 160, one mile south to the, I can't think of what that road's called.
The dump road's County U.
Goes west by the dump.
That's U.
County Road U.
Yeah, County Road U. And so we crippled that old truck they have through there. 3 miles. We couldn't see hardly in front of the truck for the smoke. And we got down there, and there was fire on both sides of the road. The tree rows were all on fire. And we got down there and found the electric poles, and there were 6 of them were fully engulfed. And we creeped down the ditch and put out all the poles. There were a couple of them, and they were on the back side of the fence. We couldn't get through, so I halfway crawled up 2 or 3 of the poles on the back side and wet my gloves so I could pat this fire out. But we got those poles out, and we kept electricity coming into town to keep the pumps running.
So where does that line come from?
It comes from 283.
It comes quick, and it wasn't...
It comes from Mineola down 283, and then it turns...
And comes across?
It turns on old 160 and comes back east into town.
Yeah, and it there hadn't been any fire around where it was, except till before it got to town here?
Not too far north. It wasn't too far north because the wind switched.
That wind switch.
Yeah, before it got that fire up. Yeah.
But it was burned all the way to 183 over there. 283, north of England.
Yeah. All the way up. So you had several problems with like the steering or something on the truck, or?
Yeah, it had blown a power steering line. Of course, we couldn't find one, so we just manhandled it. It's on strong steering all night long with that thing. But so, you couldn't go very fast because you'd go to shimmying.
Yeah.
But if you got brave, you could almost get 30 miles an hour before it starts shimmying off the road.
So you mainly stayed up down that truck line there going back and forth from the firehouse down? How far south did you go?
At one time you went up towards Davis Islands.
Yeah, that was before that.
Okay.
You see, that's where I was when I finally talked to you. Okay. When we got back the first time, after we realized that Ashton was in trouble, and then Paige comes through that Dave Bozidon's house was on fire, which is 2 miles north, 2 miles north of town, and the smoke was so thick, we got in 56 again, and we started north, and we could not see to stay in the road. So I drove with the door open and actually drove on the side of the shoulder so I could see where I was because the smoke was so thick coming through there. And it took us forever, it seemed like, to get out there because you just had to crawl because you could not see anything.
Right.
And we got there, and Dave Bozidon's, the north side of his house, was on fire. It had just come through the roof. But that wind was blowing so hard, there was nothing we could do. We got on the north side, but it just, even at the right angle, the water just blew away. Yeah. And so we knew we were fighting a worthless cause. I had another truck pull up, but we just didn't have the water supply or the right, for that situation, we didn't have the right equipment at the right place because the fire department was so strung out.
It was just, it wasn't only the fire, it was also the wind that was keeping it from being able to attack. Okay, tell me what kind of gear you were wearing.
We were in full bunker gear.
So, and how were you protecting yourself from breathing the smoke?
Just held your Nomex up over your face and your nose.
So you had most of the gear on. Did you have the goggles?
Yeah, we had everything.
And the helmet, everything on?
Except for the ear packs, because we were so...
Well, you didn't have any air packs
at the time,
and you didn't have any on that truck, did you?
No, at that we didn't have any on that truck. But
so, did you stay in the heavy gear most of the night?
Yeah.
Did you ever go? Anytime did you wear the wildfire gear?
No, I just stayed in the bunker gear because that kind of a fire, the wildland gear was not good enough.
You needed the coverage from the heat and stuff?
You needed that big insulated coat to keep that off of you.
Did you notice when the temperature changed?
Yeah. We knew when the temperature changed. I don't remember just what time it was. It was after dark.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't change a lot, but it did drop off several degrees, enough you could really feel it.
So during the time that you were going back and forth to the firehouse, was there anybody bringing in food? Did you get to eat?
Not at that time. There was stuff starting to come in, but after that, we was never back in the firehouse long enough. Maybe grab a cracker or two and try to make headway of where we were going to try and go next. Because I mean, there was just fire everywhere.
So did you get to take off and maybe get some downtime and go to bed or anything like that?
I was fully geared up for 18 hours before you really had a chance to take anything off. And like I said, when we were refilling, that gives you, you know,
a little break,
give or take 5 minutes to get filled up. So you had a little break there, but most of the time we were just on the go.
At some point, did we retire that old 56 and
yeah,
not take it out anymore?
That was its last fire. Kind of had to laugh. It had the two oldest firemen on the oldest truck on the biggest fire. we Don and I both laughed about that. So boy, isn't this a crew.
So was the sun coming up? Could you still see fire around town when the sun came up? Or?
Yeah, it was. We were sitting up there on the hill west of town. We pretty well had that fire line out. We weren't worried about it jumping, but we were up there, and I told Don, I said, "There's a sight you'll probably never see again." And of course, it wasn't actually a pure circle.
Right.
Where we were sitting, the entire town was encircled by fire.
Yeah.
And I wish that I had a camera.
Yeah. That would have been good. That is something. So the next day, when were the first volunteers from other places that you knew were there? Did anybody that you were see come in during the night, like the guys from Greeley County?
That was the next day when we started seeing those people coming in. We knew they were coming because they said they'd call for help. But there was so much fire at that time, all our mutual aid,
right,
you know, companies.
Comanche County and...
were all on fighting their own fire.
County.
Yeah.
Because we found out there was fires in Reno County, and every little district had their big fire. You know, we're kind of used to fighting a big fire and waiting for the cavalry to come over the hill and help us. All the cavalry was tied up. And
yeah.
So we basically had no help. For over 18 hours, we were entirely on our own.
So then once, like, say, noon on Tuesday, did you get another plan going, or did you have a meeting? Did everybody know what they were doing, or were you still out fighting fire in different parts?
Was still coming, fighting fire. A truck would come in, and the guys would grab something to eat and something to drink, and we'd talk a little bit about what was going on and where we were going next.
Was there anybody in charge at the firehouse that was kind of stationed there or were you mainly going off of the incident management control center?
Basically, we were going off that because the people in the firehouse, they were the ones, they were just keeping the food and, mm-hmm. and the supplies coming.
Which was, wasn't it Sherry Nair and Bart Gillespie?
Yeah, there were so many there, and I can't remember.
On Tuesday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your nieces were there.
Yeah, Trish was there and
yeah.
Brittany. But they weren't there till we got back. So let's move back to Debbie because you're stuck in Woodward and it's Tuesday morning. And
we get up Tuesday morning and we went down and had breakfast in their commissary on Woodward's. They gave us free meals and had breakfast and waited for the nurses to let us know what our plan was for the day and what they were doing. They had chosen Buffalo, ended up transferring their patients later back to Buffalo that day. Ashland decided, since the Ashland Hospital was not safe to open at that time, that they were going to house the patients, continue to house the patients in Woodward. We waited till, I know it was after 11 before they made that decision, and I had been in contact with Mr. Wettig at the school and told him that as soon as we could, we would head out.
Had they called off school already?
They had called off school already. The school had transitioned into a facility to house the volunteer or the support system coming in, all the firefighters coming in from Colorado and Kansas and Oklahoma. So Krista and I, after we got the word that they were going to keep the patients, we made the decision that we needed to head back north. And so we headed straight north. We could not, at that time, the highway was still closed to Buffalo. So we went straight north towards Coldwater.
Right.
And before I got into Coldwater, Daniel Hess, the transportation director for South Central School System, had called me and asked me where we were at because that fire was coming in north of Protection.
Right.
And they were evacuating Protection. And their lift bus with their school system had quit. And where was I and could I help? And I said, well, I'm just coming up to the junction south of Coldwater, getting ready to turn east. And I would be there as soon as I could. Krista Branson had her own medical emergency. Her son was in ill health. And we conferred with Rick Branson, her husband, to meet us. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to figure out where that was because there were still fires out around Stephen Kelly Hazen's and Mike and Myrna Cohen's and east of Protection, west of Protection. And so we ended up meeting him on County Road R. He got to Sitka and came to the north and then came back to the east and met me on County Road R, just north of the Clark County, Northern Natural Pipeline Station, Clark County 1.
Okay.
And I let Krista get off with him and then I went back to Protection to the nursing home.
So did you evacuate people then?
Evacuated people from Protection to Coldwater.
Yeah.
And once I got over to Coldwater, they put me on standby there. And I ended up being there almost 3 to 4 hours.
You live in Protection.
Yes.
Did you know what your house looked like? Or
no.
What,
well,
had you got to go home?
I knew that the fire had not made it to Protection that day. After waiting around and they said that they weren't sure, but they were talking about that they were going to evacuate Coldwater.
Mm-hmm.
So I waited around 3 or 4 hours and they had the wind had changed a little bit more and they were still worried about Protection. So they were going to keep everybody there in Protection or in Coldwater. So after it was safe to return back to Protection, I went on back to Protection and talked to Mr. Wettig and told him that I was just going to leave the bus there. That way, if they needed me in Coldwater, if I need to go back to Woodward, I could. And so that's what I did. And that next night, the next day, then I loaded up and got the call from Ashland and went down south and helped bring patients back.
On Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So they were all back in. Mm-hmm. Everything. Okay, so Tuesday, what
Thursday
fire truck were you on?
Tuesday for a while. We did some fire line running with mm-hmm. the truck to make sure everything was still good to the west of us. And then I ended up, well, the call came in that they were evacuating protection. It was coming in from the northwest. And just shortly after that, Deb called me. She said, "They're evacuating protection. Where are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm in a truck over here," but I said, "I'm fixing to see if I can get released to go to protection to see what's going on, see what I can do." Uh-huh. And I got a hold of Dave Reger, and he said, "Go." Because he said, we're okay if you need to go take care of your stuff. So I drove through and on east on 160 to protection, and just, it was like a different world. Everything was black and still covered with smoke, but I could see the smoke to the north where it was coming in. Mm-hmm. And on the way over there, I called the Comanche County Fire Chief, Greg Ellis, and said, "Where are you guys at and what's going on?" I told him what was what. He said, "Well, we've got it. It's coming down the creek." And he said, "We can't stop it." Mm-hmm. And we live on the north side of town, just above that creek, mm-hmm. and it was going to come across us. There wasn't any doubt. Uh-huh. And I said, "Well, I'm going to be at my house." I said, "I'm almost back into town." He told me, "Good luck." He said, "You know, we'll just do what we can do."
So they have all the trucks out of their barn that day, too?
Yes, they were all Comanche County Protection. All the Comanche County trucks were out.
Protection, Coldwater, and Rollmore.
Yeah.
And Greensburg was assisting them, I think. So.
And had the strike team started showing up by now? Some of the ones from Kansas?
Yes.
Like the one from Cali County or...
Yeah, some of the first ones.
Some of them had started coming in that morning, but I didn't realize it at the time.
Yeah. I actually didn't transfer the Ashland patients back till Thursday. They stayed two nights
they were,
in one.
Yeah, they did.
What time was it Monday night? Did I call you or you call me when we finally got a hold of each other?
1:30 in the morning.
That's what I was thinking.
Yes.
We kind of had a little break, and I thought, I know they evacuated the hospital, but I said, I don't know where my wife is. And I thought, I better give her a call and tell her I'm still okay.
Yeah.
And she said, "Well, I'm down." Finally got a hold of her, and she said, "Where are you at?" And I told her. She said, "Well, I'm in Buffalo. I'm in Woodward right now."
So did you fight much fire on Wednesday? Or did they start letting you have some downtime Wednesday?
We started being able to get switched off.
Did you go back and work for the city any time during the week?
I never did. I talked to Doug Graff and told him where I was at, and he said, I know where you're at." He said, "We've got everything handled," because they were replacing poles. They had lost a lot of electric poles. Right. And it comes
west
to
of town.
City.
Yeah.
Well, in our area that the city electricity covers. It goes north of town, and it goes south of ways, and it goes west. Mm-hmm. And they replaced how many poles that first Tuesday and Wednesday? They'd replaced close to 60 some poles to keep electricity to people's houses,
or to re-put it in, right?
Yeah.
Restore electricity.
And, he wasn't worried about me because he knew what I was on the fire department.
So you were back here, and then you went back down and helped pick up mm-hmm. the...
And I was back here, and I came over to Ashland to see what I could do at the firehouse, and it was absolutely nothing.
That's a pretty good crew, though.
I ended up going up to the school. By that time, Jason Endicott had called me and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm waiting for him to decide when they're going to transfer patients back." And he said, "Let's grab some vans." And he said, "We've got lots of water already being delivered. Let's start." So Jamie Wedding, Jason Endicott, and myself, I drove them around because I know the country.
Right.
And I have a new superintendent from out of the area.
Yes.
He didn't know how to get to where. And honestly, Jason Jason doesn't go out to the country a lot. Like, I know all the country roads.
Yes. So
I grew up here. And
for all the bus
and
routes.
For all the bus routes. And I knew where everybody lived. So we started, headed north and started checking on all of our students and their families and delivering water and food and, you know, crackers and anything we could take and seeing what their needs were, what they needed. And we went to, like, Brandon and Heather Grigsby's, mm-hmm. and they had quite a story to tell. And we went to Jenny Betcher, Jenny and Shane Betcher's, and to Katie and Brett Shaw. Of course, by that time, they had transitioned into Ashland to his parents' house.
So, but were they already in cleanup mode when you were out there?
No.
Still trying
no.
to?
No. What they were doing is they had so many cattle, so many cows that were still with calf. Mm-hmm. And what they were doing, they had a vet and game wardens out there, and they were checking those cows to see if there was any viable calves. And putting animals down. Mm-hmm. And so they had one barn that did not burn, and we unloaded lots of water there, headed from there over towards Ashland Feeders to the east, where we have 10 kids,
right.
10 school children, and to see what their needs were and talked with the feedlot manager. And his name has slipped me at this point. Anyway, we visited with him and found out that he and his wife had lost their house. And we went on over towards John and Lisa Moore's and Paul Harden and made a circle that direction. Went back towards Ashland and ended up reloading the van and went towards Inglewood.
All in one day?
All in one day. And we continued to do that for several days.
Keep making the same circle or going different places?
Going different directions and trying to make sure that we touch base with all of our families in the Inglewood area and up north and south of Sitka.
Yeah. So
south of Ashland and south of Sitka.
Yeah. So what's your most vivid memory of the fire?
Mine? I think it was early on, because I ended up missing a lot of that, was over trying to get Dan to the pasture road to meet up with a fire truck and firefighter, mm-hmm. and could not get through there. And knowing that there was no way to get down that pasture road to meet that fire truck. And having to go clear back to the highway, because people do not realize that out in this country we have lots of canyons. We are not the typical flat Kansas area.
Right.
And there are only a few roads that go across.
That's true.
And there's only, to my knowledge, there's only really three roads that come off the pasture road to the west.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. From Ashland north to Neola.
Yeah.
So, and we could get through there, and I think that's my most vivid memory.
Yep.
That and seeing the fire line, knowing that the fire line was completely from Ashland to Buffalo to Fort Supply.
Yeah.
And so.
All right. What's your most vivid memory?
It was just so big that it covered such an immense area and so quick. You know, when you realize there's 30, 40 miles of fire line.
Yep.
You know, I'm used to seeing, we've had 10 miles fire line, and even I've been on some fires over in Comanche County where it's 20 mile fire line. But it was just nothing. It's just, this was everywhere you looked was fire.
So you've both been around the fire department for a long time, and mm-hmm. you've lived in this area, and you've known about grass fires and also about burns, you know, prescribed burns where they're going to go set stuff. And how is there any way to compare those types of things to this fire?
No.
No. I don't think so. The only comparison is there just wasn't enough. There wasn't enough manpower and not enough trucks to begin with. With 70 mile an hour winds, there was just not any way to stop this thing. There was not enough manpower and not enough trucks.
We had strike team guys. This was 2 or 3 days on later, and even a week later, they told us that. Said, you guys got nothing to feel bad about. Said, we don't know anybody that could have handled this type of a fire like you had. Said, you guys had a real fire. Said, you guys had nothing to be ashamed of, because he said, we don't know of anybody that could have handled this any better.
Yeah.
They said, you know, if you had 60 trucks in a row lined up, this fire would overwhelm them.
Yep.
And they said they learned a lot.
Different things.
Really nice, really nice people. Just super.
Some of those guys that came out of Colorado, I remember the guys talking about, they were amazed that these guys would ride out on the front or the back of the trucks and fight fire, because out there where they fight forestry fires, they get off and walk.
Right.
They pull real lines and walk, you know. Uh-huh. But I remember Bill Nyer talking about these guys. He said, but you give them a chainsaw and they know how to take a tree down. That's on fire.
Yeah.
He said they can make it in a hurry. But.
So who were some of the people or agencies that proved most helpful during the fire that you're aware of?
Fire, EMS, emergency preparedness, the church groups, the school.
The support we got from everybody is overwhelming.
The school kicked in and started cooking meals. They housed all the firefighters. They provided showers and clean towels and whatever they can do. The school really stepped in.
That was one comment I got, that these guys said, we've never really had accommodations like we had here. She said, you guys said, this town went above and beyond. They said they were so impressed.
They fed them 3 meals a day, you know, whoever was in. But families that were displaced and the ones that were still trying to, you know, came to town to eat.
Right.
And it was a community place for people to come and talk and hug. And,
yeah.
And you know, the community support was there. So
did you volunteer at the school or at the camp after main week they had volunteers here?
I did volunteer at the school when I kind of got back in, and during that week that we were out, and then we went into the week of spring break after that.
Right.
And so I continued driving a van and taking water and dispersing things and figuring out who needed things.
Yep.
And getting it to those families out in the country. And
did you help down at the camp?
I did help down at the camp. Helped them. I didn't do a lot except in the evenings because I was busy during the day. But I did help down there. And then once the crews, after the fire, once the crews started coming in to help clean up, like tear down fence and help help clean up houses and that kind of stuff, the school let me have a school bus, and I started hauling crews out because I know where everybody lives and where their land is.
Yes.
So I would talk with Holly Fast was in charge of that, and so she would call me and tell me that we're going to take 2 or 3 crews, and we try, and I'd make one circle with a school bus, and I'd drop them off. I might go towards the Inglewood area, or I might go towards Protection and north of Ashland. Okay. And I delivered crews, and we had several big crews come in out of Michigan and Minnesota. We had a big crew, and the school let me take out the activity bus and kind of take them so they could get they were just seeing pieces of it.
Yes.
And so we kind of took them in a in a circle and let them see how big this was. And then we also took them up towards like the basin because these kids had never seen buffalo and things like that. So we did a few things like that. Jesse Lucky came in and went with us, and he's down off the Snake Creek Ranch where they had fire devastation.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some of these kids down there working with him. Yeah. And we both had the same idea, and so we made it work. And they were here one weekend, and they were just one group. I don't know how many groups of people came in.
Yeah.
The volunteer people that came from all over the United States.
It's amazing.
The hay and everything that came in afterwards is just...
Right. So when did you go back to work for the city? Like the next week?
I think I actually went to work that Friday.
Oh, yeah.
I think I went in to see where the guys were and how things were doing there. And then I was there for a while, and then I ended up back on a truck. We were doing spot runs.
Right.
At different places. You know, well, we got another one broke out here. Doing a lot of mop up and clean up.
Wait, the guys doing that, they would take out the support fire trucks, the support firefighters out to the area too.
Yeah, kind of like a guide.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Show them where they
to get them in there and how to maneuver back to where they needed to go. So yeah. They were doing things like that too.
So can you perceive of anything positive that resulted from the fire?
I think the community's a little closer. It just kind of made a bonding for everybody because it affected everybody.
Right.
And we were so lucky that we didn't lose anybody from this county. Everybody, we all survived.
We had no loss of life for our county.
And no major injuries?
Mm-hmm. The only injury and death that there was in this county was an out-of-state trucker that got over on Highway 34. He had come up from the south and got caught in that fire and ultimately lost his life. There was two or three vehicles. I think he was probably trying to turn around, and the smoke was so thick he ended up jackknifing his truck and had three vehicles. Was it three?
Two.
At least two. There were three vehicles there, but only two were in the accident.
Ran into the trailer of the truck. And those people were injured, and the ambulance was
pretty close.
Dispatched out there. So, but
were they dispatched, or were they on their way back from Iran?
The first out ambulance was on a run to Pratt, a transfer, before all this really blew up. The second out ambulance was dispatched out there. And the first ambulance ended up trying to go cross country and ended up out in a wheat field because of the fire was going to overcome them.
Yep.
So,
not good. So, out of all of this, there was physical, there was financial, and there was emotional upheaval. Which do you think affected people more? Or that has affected you? I mean, is it more of a physical thing or the financial?
Just looking at the community, I mean, we were, as a couple and everything, as we were not affected financially. We were not, I think, emotionally more for me, because I knew all the people that lost their homes, and I heard all of these stories of how close some of them came to losing their life.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing, the stories.
I think so. I think the emotional part of it, and the fact that I knew these families had lost their home and lost everything.
So you come from protection every day. How is that drive every day? I mean, has it gotten better?
Yeah, it's better, but
I can still see it.
We're still amazed. I drive north where that wind came from the lake and came south. I drive that every day. And I can still see the difference of where that wind shift was and where that fire came across there. Even though the grass did grow back, there's still that. And the highway's still black.
Yeah.
Where that fire crossed to 34 Highway going north from the Sitka Junction. It's still black in those areas. Mm-hmm. You know, it just scorched the highway. Yeah, yeah. And going towards Inglewood, you can see where it scorched the highway when it went across there.
And those trees?
Yeah.
On that.
The tree rows are gone.
Our landscape has changed because these 100-year-old cottonwoods are dead.
Yeah, they're gone.
A lot of them are still standing, but the bark's fallen off of them. They're dying. Yeah. They're dying a slow death. Some of them, after the rains came, some of them had just branches that were green. Mm-hmm. But as the bark has fallen off of them, the trees have died. So and we haven't had any rain up to now. We are so dry again. We're in the same position we were last March. And maybe even in a worse position. And it really frightens me. And I know anybody that smells smoke is making phone calls.
Yeah.
And so that emotional end is... it's still there. It's still so really relevant.
When the fire alarm goes off now, what do you guys think? Or
you just cross your fingers and say, well, here we go.
Yeah.
One of the things that really got me I came back to Ashland Tuesday night. Greg had, the fire chief called me and said, we got the fire stopped. The wind backed up enough, says we stopped it. Protection's going to be okay for now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought, well, I'm here. I jumped in, I took a quick shower and changed and went back to Ashland. But I had my gear with me. I didn't even take my gear off when I went back to protection. So I geared back up with fresh clothes on and came back over. And there was enough of a break that they said there's a meal down at the church camp. No, at the church.
No, at the church.
Christian church.
Yeah.
And so I went in there, and that was my first hot meal in almost 30 hours.
Yeah.
And I'm coming out of there, and Jeanette Wilson and her girls came up there and just run up there and give me a great big hug. I thought, they've lost everything.
Yeah.
And I'm fine. I told them, I said, well, I'm worried about you guys. She said, we're not. I said, we're fine. We're worried about you guys.
Yeah. There was a lot of that.
There's a lot of stories. You know, there was a guy up north that was hauling water to the fireman that had lost his house. But none of the firemen knew it at that time.
Yeah.
You know, and there's just... story after story like that.
Yep. So what can you do or have you done to prepare for a future fire?
We've made sure we've upgraded equipment at the firehouse.
Uh-huh.
We have, at EMS, we've came up with plans and what we will do, supplies, you know, uh-huh. ice packs and burn supplies and that kind of stuff. The school has emergency plans towards housing and becoming a disaster, a place for people to go.
Right.
The Christian churches, that camp was a wonderful thing for people to go if they needed a bed.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they've upgraded. They have air conditioning and some of that in their dining halls, and are upgrading their dormitories with air conditioners.
I think it was more cold there than it was hot, right?
Yes.
During most of March.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but They have upgraded, did a lot of work down there, and still are.
Yeah. So you think the community's more prepared, better prepared?
Yeah,
I think so. We know now, everybody knows that it can't happen. You know, yeah. We've always talked about it before to a point, but, it happened somewhere else. Well, it did somewhere. It was us.
Yeah.
One of the good things that Ashland had already in place was a community foundation.
Yes.
And those people did a good job of, because that was when people were wanting to send money and do things like that, that was a good, safe place for that money to go and be accounted for. Yeah. And those people did a great job there.
And all the volunteers that came and they
took
care of that too. All comes from that strategic planning committee that they had.
So. And that was a big thing for Ashland. And, looking back, because I don't think the year before when that fire went through Harper County up into Menace Lodge that they had anything like that in place. Mm-hmm. And they were pretty well overwhelmed.
Yeah, I think so. So do you have any other thoughts that you'd like to share about this experience?
I hope we don't have to relive it.
I hope we don't have to do it again. Yeah. Of course, I thought that after the Anderson Creek fire over at Medicine Lodge, I thought, man, we'll never see nothing like this. It was just awesome. It's mind-boggling to see that, to know how far that fire was, how wide that was.
Yeah.
At the same time, that's what it happened so fast. That was the difference between our fire here and Anderson Creek. It stayed down in those canyons, and they could actually sit and wait for that fire to come up to them as we progressed. We burned as much in 24 hours, and it took 3 days over there to burn that much.
Right.
Ours was just so fast.
When it came out of Oklahoma into southwest Kansas, down west and south of Englewood, there's a lot of flat pasture grassland.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came up through there and up towards the Gardner Ranch and then on into Ashland, there's a lot, lots and lots of grassland.
Yeah, and up north.
Uh-huh.
There wasn't any wheat fields up
there.
There
was not a lot. Very few.
Now when that wind switched and it came down off that road, it's like driving down into a bowl. If you stand up there at the top of the ridge up there and look towards Ashland sits in a hole. This whole area sits in a valley. And when that fire came from that direction at that time, that was just solid grass all the way into Ashland.
We drove up and took pictures that weekend on Sunday.
Yeah.
After the fire, took pictures of the Clark County Lake.
Ooh.
And
seen some
of the just. It went from being green and lush to
just
black.
Just
cleaned out all the trees and the brush, and it just the change in it was pretty dramatic.
When we were doing that, and that's when I realized how far north that fire had went while we were up there before the wind switch. It was. I figured that it was going through the lake already while we were at when that wind switched. It was already through the lake because it went so far north and it was north of the Pike Ranch. Up there is when you could see exactly where that stopped when that wind came in, and then that just made the big circle when it switched it from the northeast to the southeast, and then that was just a straight arrow toward protection.
Yeah.
When it was clear up north there, that's where the protection fire came from.
It went down, it went from the lake down towards Giles Ranch and towards Lexington community. And then from there it crossed into Comanche County.
Mm-hmm.
And
did all that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your experiences.
Thank you. Never forget about it.
when you start to talk about it, it's like